Robert is the executive director of the North Carolina Harm Reduction Coalition, and part of their accomplishment, well, actually they have many accomplishments in North Carolina, including passage of multiple bills in North Carolina around Good Samaritan laws and responsible opioid use, and also they have one of the largest naloxone distribution programs. So I'm really looking forward to learning about your experiences. So please help me welcome Robert Childs.
Well, thank you all, having a humble Carolinian here today. Really excited to be here. And today I'm just going to talk about a variety of different stuff, mostly revolving around naloxone, but I'm going to veer off course too. But I'm going to talk a bit about some of the bills we passed in North Carolina and Georgia, and something, you know, some information about the overdose epidemics in each state, go a bit over naloxone, what it is, and how we've successfully utilized it. We also ran a law enforcement readiness study on the use of naloxone, and then implemented the project, and then we also run a rural Appalachian drug user and methadone patient naloxone program, but we give out naloxone all over the state and also help out those people living in urban areas as well. We don't hoard all the stuff for the rural sections, though we do like doing that. So I work for an organization we're called North Carolina Harm Reduction Coalition. We're the only comprehensive harm reduction provider in North Carolina. And something that's a little different about our organization is we actively involve law enforcement, which has also been a bit of the secret to our legislative success. And we give out naloxone in a lot of different places through peer distributors, meaning people from the community. So they could be an active user, could be a methadone person, could be some nurse who's giving it out on the side, or a concerned mom. And you can see all those red stars. That's everywhere with dispense. We have a like official naloxone dispenser who's community-based. We sprinkle our staff around the state. We're only 2.5 employees, but we cover different regions. And then the blue stars are all naloxone programs based out of law enforcement stations that we've set up around North Carolina and Georgia. And then we also help oversee a overdose prevention program in Atlanta and Marietta, and that's going to be expanding greatly quite shortly. We also organize active drug users into drug user unions, so then we can alert drug users on different issues affecting their communities. We have law enforcement programs, again, all over. We have military programs, and we just try and stay as involved as possible. The other thing that's interesting about us is we have a membership agency. We have 6,000 members that work with us on a variety of different issues. So the reason we need naloxone, and again, the last presentation kind of went over it, is our drug overdose epidemic in North Carolina has gone crazy. We have a lot of unintentional drug overdoses, and in Georgia, same thing. You know, this is no surprise after all the presentations you've probably heard. So our organization in response passed two bills that relate to this in North Carolina and Georgia. We passed the first Republican harm reduction bill that was a drug overdose prevention bill in the country called Senate Bill 20. It had two components, naloxone access and Good Samaritan immunity. The naloxone access allowed prescribers to prescribe naloxone to a person at risk of drug overdose or any other person in a position to assist the person at risk of experiencing an opioid-related overdose. We also said, most importantly, that prescribers can prescribe naloxone via standing order, which means that if the doctor writes a standing order saying, anybody who works for me, who volunteers in the agency or consults for the agency, can dispense naloxone for me. Meaning, I, as a non-medical person, and all my drug users I work with, and all the concerned moms I work with, and all the concerned family members I work with, and all the concerned community people I work with, if I make them volunteers, they can dispense naloxone for me, allowing us to actually run the cheapest naloxone distribution program in the country. We also provided immunity for bystanders to administer naloxone, and we also got all parties acting as authorized by law are immune from civil and criminal liability as long as they're acting in good faith, meaning if you think as a drug overdose you administer naloxone, you're immune from any civil or criminal liability. We also passed a Good Samaritan provision. Basically what it says is if you call 911 in good faith, you can't be arrested for small amounts of drugs or paraphernalia at the site of the drug overdose, and it also applies for the victim. In North Carolina, since we passed the first one, we took what we could get legislatively, and we could only get immunity from prosecution. And when we passed the bill in Georgia, we got arrest charge and prosecution. And that's really important because it still means we find people in jail all the time when we train in the jails that have been arrested and charged for drug charges went and they're put into our correctional centers not knowing that they can't be prosecuted, meaning it was a total garbage arrest. In Georgia, when we passed the bill, we made sure we had that corrected. And we did that through working with the sheriff's associations and the associations of police chiefs, and we have a lot of clout with those organizations because we actively involve them in all the processes. So, you know, this is a really nice line, and it talks about all the different components of really good Samaritan language and also naloxone language, and you can actually see the Southeast where our organization has lobbied and advocated. We have two of the strongest laws in the country, and they're both Republican laws, Republican-led, and they did awesome jobs in providing leadership nationally in some of the best laws in the country for it, and we're beating out a lot of those other states up north, which we're kind of excited about. No judgments from the Southerners. Okay, so with the naloxone and Narcan, if you haven't heard of it, have folks not heard of Narcan here in naloxone? I presume this is a very naloxone-y crowd. But if not, oh, we have mixed audience. Good God. Okay, good job. So naloxone and Narcan is an opiate-opioid antagonist, meaning it blocks the effects of opiates or opioids. So if I jab somebody with a needle that has naloxone, if I shoot a nasal spray, or I use the most expensive delivery tool in the world named Invisio, to administer the overdose or administer it when somebody has overdosed, it brings them back to life in a couple minutes. I've overseen hundreds of these. It works every time if you administer it. It's freaking awesome. It's been used over 10,000 times by community-based people, meaning you don't need any training. And most of those community-based people that MMWR surveyed or got data from were active injection drug users, meaning it doesn't matter what you're at, if you're really mentally ill, if you're compromised with your intelligence, you can still use it. Everybody knows how to inject somebody. It's really, there's not much to it. And now that we also have hundreds of law enforcement departments also carrying it, we're changing the paradigm with law enforcement to get them to administer it. And it's really important in rural settings, because in rural settings, law enforcement are often the first responder, not EMS. So looking at it in the brain, what happens is if you get too many opiates or opioids, initially you're going to get pain relief, then you're going to get some euphoria, then you're going to get a little sleepy, and after you get a little sleepy, you go into respiratory depression. If you get Narcan or naloxone, they're the same thing. The Narcan has a higher binding affinity to the opiate-opioid receptor sites in the brain to kick off the opiates or opioids, which are telling you not to breathe, and then you breathe again and you wake up as Lord Grumpleton. You wake up very grumpy and in complete withdrawal, and it's very, people aren't happy about it. So with our law enforcement training program, we actually train over 100 departments a year. We have a third of our memberships also law enforcement, and we work with them, and we give them a pre- and post-test on their attitudes towards syringes, and we've found some amazing data with that showing that we had 62% of law enforcement want syringes fully decriminalized. We've published that in Alcohol and Drug Dependence, but we also collect data on the attitudes towards drug overdose and overdose prevention and their readiness to implement naloxone. And then we found that 92% of officers do want to carry naloxone, which we thought, we didn't think it was going to be that high, but we were really excited about it. And we also found, you know, it's about the same thing. Are you willing to, and do you think your peers? It's around 92%. The other thing that we're really excited about is when we trained them on Senate Bill 20, which is our comprehensive overdose prevention law, we found 94% of officers thought it would lower overdose death, which we're really excited about, showing that law enforcement get the law and want it to be implemented, which is really exciting. And from that, since we passed these laws, we've been able to get a bunch of rural law enforcement programs in Appalachia to carry naloxone, and some of them that are going to start around January 1st. And it's all over the North Georgia, Western North Carolina region. And they actually make up a very large group of the overall groups carrying naloxone. And most of the naloxone programs by law enforcement are actually run in rural sections of the state where it takes EMS forever to show up. So on average, it takes EMS like 20 minutes-ish to show up to a scene. In rural sections of the state, it could be 40 minutes to an hour. But what we find is if we equip them with naloxone, the cops get there before EMS. They don't have to wait around for EMS to reserve the drug overdose, because we know it's going to take 6 to 8 minutes for somebody to die after they've gone into respiratory depression. And if we can Narcan them, if the cops get there earlier, they don't have to wait another 20 minutes to 40 minutes to reverse a drug overdose. So it's basically empowering law enforcement to work on carrier naloxone so they can be part of the solution. And what we found out, especially in Western Carolina and North Georgia, is a lot of officers are getting post-traumatic stress disorder from seeing so many people die in front of them because they're waiting around for EMS for so long, and all their community members they grew up with, because in Appalachia, a lot of the law enforcement are members of that community, and they're seeing all their peers and loved ones die, and it's really pissing them off, and they're getting high rates of PTSD. And so I've worked a lot with the chief of Waynesville, which is a wonderful place to visit if you have not been there, and you have two delicious breweries. But side story. But Chief Bill and I have been working on starting their overdose prevention program, but he doesn't just want it for his community. He wants it for every precinct in his county, of Haywood County, North Carolina, which is some of the highest drug overdose rates in the country. And we're working with him, and his main concern initially was officer-related PTSD, and that's why he wanted to do it. And then he's like, it's hurting my community, so I want to be part of the solution, which I thought was pretty awesome. And he's been a very big advocate with us for more comprehensive overdose prevention laws. The other thing that we've done to ensure community buy-in is we've overtaken the media coverage of it. So we publish about 300 articles a year on the benefits of naloxone, comprehensive overdose prevention programs, and harm reduction, which has enabled, like in North Carolina, you can't find a negative article on naloxone because we've made sure that that doesn't happen. So one of my employees spends a large amount of their time making sure that there's accurate information about naloxone because we know it doesn't encourage drug use. We know it decreases drug overdose rates in a community. If you flood that community with naloxone by almost up to 50%, it is the best intervention possible. And so we know if we can push that more, we can see really good results. The other reason cops also like it is it does a lot of healing with communities, because law enforcement often seen as people taking away from the community. And then with this, we can show that they're actually giving back and supporting the life of the community. So we've gotten a lot of awesome media for cops out of it, and then they like us a little more, and then they work with us in the legislature a little more, which is very exciting. So amongst our drug user program, again, most of our dispensing is done in the community. I think we've only dispensed about 5 kits out of our office in Durham. The other 4,995 have been given out in the community. I don't like sitting down. So we think if, you know, you're going to find people who are most at risk, you have to go to them. They're not going to come into your office ever. So we're really big about getting out there. And we have 12 naloxone dispensers in Appalachia. And again, we're doing it all through the standing order. So in Georgia, we had a doctor write a standing order for our program there at Atlanta Harm Reduction. We pay them $0 a year because they wrote a piece of paper saying, go do it. And then we just have everybody go do it. In North Carolina, we pay our person a couple hundred bucks, but, you know, it's freaking awesome, because if I had to bring a doctor, like when I ran the model in New York, when I was running an overdose prevention program there, we had to pay the doctor on the hour to write every script. They don't need to be there for this. They really don't. You know, and it's a lot more effective module if you don't have them present. And doctors are also a barrier, because you don't want to tell your doctor, oh, I may be boogieing on the side, so I need that naloxone, right? You're not going to have that conversation, and it creates awkward relationship with your medical provider. And so, you know, we find it's a lot more successful not to have them there. We encourage that they go talk to them, but we know the majority of people won't do that. And so we also dispense at methadone clinics. We actually dispense at literally every single methadone clinic in Appalachia besides one, and they're about to allow us to dispense, which I'm very excited about. And we also go out and find active injection drug user zones and get them naloxone and active. And we specifically also go after pill injectors, because it is a pretty high-risk group as well, and we do everything from going to shooting galleries, private residences, laundromats, wherever they're hanging out. And since I threw these numbers up a couple weeks ago, we've actually had 19 more drug overdose reversals in the last 2 weeks. In Appalachia, we've had 60 overdose reversals total now, and we're doing it through a lot of street outreach, a lot of venue outreach where they congregate, and we collect data via, you can give us a web form, you can email me, you can text me, but the way we find most of them is they just tell us when we go and see them again, or we run into them. Like, most people won't call us or tell us via web form or email because they're afraid of getting into trouble because they've never really met us before, so they're not going to tell us. Total, as of this morning, we've reversed over 202 drug overdoses all around the state, and all doing it through low threshold services, and we've been able to have a really high impact, especially on the heroin using population. And in conclusion, I mean, our program has, in a state where we have 1,100 overdoses a year, within a 14-15 month period, we've been able to reverse 200 in the community, which, you know, and we did it with barely any money. Like, we don't get much money at all to run our programs. You know, our entire overdose prevention program, staff and naloxone, we're running it for under 40 grand, right? We don't have any funding in the South, right? So, you know, I don't have any state entity giving us any money. This is all, like, volunteer power through peer distribution, and you can have a giant impact on the community through using a lot of peer volunteers, or I have some people I pay them a symbolic dollar. But really, like, people want to dispense, and they can keep a basic medical record to turn into a medical provider, and you can have a humongous impact on your community, and we've been able to do it. And also, we collect information to then create advocacy and legislative power. So we get, you know, we work with all these people in the community, and then we want them to be engaged with our organization so we can have more legislative power to engage in legislative change. And we've been able to do that by, you know, working with folks, you know, at risk and their families, and then empowering them to create change so it doesn't happen to any more of their loved ones, which has allowed us to pass legislation by getting them more involved in the civic and legislative process. So we've had a lot of success, a stack of buy-in from law enforcement because we kept them involved and we keep them educated on the issues, and also by drug users and people on methadone and the family who love them. And community leaders have all bought into this, and we've also, we find one of the most important parts of that is letting people know it's working as well. So we have a big media program, which we highly encourage other folks do as well, to let people know this naloxone use is a really successful tool in reducing opioid drug overdoses in your state. Thanks.